Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we're going to get back to reading from the M39 Management's Handbook in our continuing goal to make you discipline-proof, and now also to give you the upper hand on management. So a few things before we get started. First, I've realized that even though my voice sounds pretty good through this microphone and this free app that I'm using on my Chromebook, what differentiates my voice and my recording from a true professional quality recording is this. You can hear it when I breathe. And it's because this audio system doesn't have on it what's called a noise gate, where a noise gate has like a minimum threshold of sound, and anything quieter than that sound doesn't get recorded. But in this case, it just records everything. And so I looked at microphones that might have a built-in gate, and I don't know if they're going to be compatible with a Chromebook, and I don't know if I want to spend that much money. And this free app does not have anything like that built in. And what I like about this free app is that it doesn't crash. And boy, crashes can be super frustrating. And the few times it does crash, it automatically recovers what I was recording, which is super helpful. This is called Audio Lab, and it's available through the Play Store. And they're not paying me to endorse it, but it was a free app anyway. And it really works for me. So what that means is that for the foreseeable future, you will have to deal with hearing my in-breath and at least be happy that I don't make a ton of mouth noises, because those would all come up also. So with that out of the way, I have another more minor business to attend to. I went to day one of the Region 1 union training today. This is my first real convention type thing like that. There's probably 500 carriers there, maybe more. And I took a class today on beginning steward stuff, like the low level things, and it was okay. I was pleased to see that there was almost no new information in there. I knew pretty much all of that stuff. And it was hosted, because it's a Region 1 training, the Region 1 business agent was there, who had a minor role in the last podcast I just did about my Carrier Academy issue. And in that training, the trainer said at least three times, I think five times, that you can't trust management to do what they say. Just because they say it, that doesn't mean anything. You have to get it in writing. Anything they do, any agreements you come up with, they all have to be in writing or you don't have anything. And these are the same people who told me that, you're put back in the Carrier Academy. And what's in writing to confirm any of this? Nothing. So, lucky me. Also of note, at day one of this training was we had surprise guest appearances of Chris Jackson. It was the first time I'd seen him in person, and he came and gave us a little rah-rah speech, and he was really inspirational. And again, came across as a really good dude who was a servant of the union, a servant of his members, and that was nice to see. And then, oh my God, now I'm blanking on the other guy's name. It was on the 8 Arbitration podcast when he read all the charges on the union president. It was the guy who had been maligned and tried to get a meeting with Renfro, and Renfro wouldn't meet with him. And why can I not think of his name? But hopefully you know who I'm talking about. Anyway, he was there too. And so tomorrow, Renfro is supposed to be there for the rap session, and that could wind up being really interesting. So whatever happens, I will come back and I'll report back to you guys what I learned while I was there. And I'm probably going to do a podcast very soon on just my impression of being a union steward in the early stages, which is what I think of it so far and what I've learned. So that's coming up. And if there's any major news, well, I'll probably talk about that too, but I'm sure that by the time that recorded episode comes out, you will have already heard it elsewhere. But if you only get your postal information from me, a woe be unto your soul, and you'll at least hear what I have to say when that comes out. All right. So, I've already completely wasted 4.5 minutes. Let's get to the M39. We pick up where we left off at 141, Minor Adjustments. 141.1, Route Adjustment Without Special Inspections. This is obviously going to talk about how management can make changes to your route and what the process is supposed to be. So yeah, this is definitely relevant. It's something that carriers think about a lot, like, man, what if management wants to try to change my route? Well, we're going to find out. 141.111. The routes must be maintained in reasonable adjustment throughout the year. In order to fulfill this requirement, local managers may find it necessary to make minor route adjustments to provide relief, add deliveries, capture undertime, etc. 141.112. When considering if a mail count and route inspection is necessary, review the nature and scope of the adjustments needed. If the review discloses that only minor adjustments are necessary, the adjustment should be made from current management records and information. 141.113. When it is observed that a delivery unit is regularly exceeding its daily authorized carrier hours, as indicated on the latest PS Form 3998, Unit Summary of City Delivery Assignments, see Chapter 3, management must first ensure that the applicable procedures in this chapter are fully implemented and enforced. Particular attention must be given to carrier scheduling, receipt of mail, and carrier work methods in the office and on the street. Some other areas that should be reviewed are delivery unit changes in office routines, street management, and additional or more beneficial segmentation of mail. Well, we don't do the segmentation anymore now that we have DPS. But this does talk about, you know, I'm reading this for the first time with you guys, that before they go making changes to routes, they need to look at all these other things first. So if your route is being changed, then this may be one of the things you cite is, hey, did you do all these things first that are outlined in 141.111? 141.12, office routines. 141.121, delivery managers must continually review carrier office routines in order to determine whether all unnecessary time-consuming practices have been eliminated or reduced to an absolute minimum. A review should be made of the unit layout to ensure that the workroom is arranged to minimize travel and to facilitate an orderly flow of mail. All excess and unnecessary equipment should be removed from the workroom floor. If this is not possible, place it in an area where it will not interfere with an efficient operation. 141.122. Where possible, at least 80% of the carrier's mail should be on the case ledge prior to the carrier reporting. I'm going to interrupt here to say that that's one of the things that the union is supposed to look at when management tries to change our start times. If all the mail is not there yet, then they can push the start time back until the mail does get there. And lately at my station, management has been threatening to push back our start times. We actually had a supervisor explicitly say that it would be pushed back as punishment for not getting to the street fast enough. And at our station, we're waiting on parcels. So as we've mentioned in previous readings of the M39, all the stuff in here is about mail, not about the parcels. And we easily have 80% of our mail prior to reporting. All right, so continuing with 141.122, at offices where it is impractical to place mail on or near the carrier's case prior to the reporting time, management should consider establishing a fixed schedule for mail withdrawals or establishing a minimum number of controlled withdrawals. The withdrawal should be scheduled to coincide with the receipt of mail or the distribution needs of the office. Carriers must not be allowed to withdraw their mail except under controlled conditions in order to facilitate the volume recording process. However, regardless of the procedure used in the office, mail received from the main office or mail distributed at the unit while the carriers are on the street should be on the carrier's cases when they return from the street. 141.13, street management. 141.131. Delivery managers must ensure that carriers hold the number of park points, swings, loops, and relays to the absolute minimum necessary to provide delivery. Unnecessary movement of vehicles and vehicle stops not only expand street time, but also waste energy. On that note, I'm going to digress here, talk about my own personal experience. So I have a park and loop route. I have like a very small section of over the curb, and the rest is park and loop. And I like long loops. My first two parking loops are both about 50 houses each, and that's really long. And if I could, I would make them longer because I really enjoy walking. I hike in my spare time, and wearing that double satchel, it feels like my backpack when I'm hiking. And it's pleasurable for me. I'd much rather just walk the whole day rather than like get back in the truck and move the truck and all that stuff. And so my route has a few streets that have deadheads on them, where there's only houses on the one side of the street, and it kind of makes a cap to all these other parking loops, where the parking loops run perpendicular to the street that has the deadhead. And if I had my druthers, what I would do is incorporate little chunks of that deadhead street to make like little T's on the top of those other parking loops. But man, that would make the case so complicated. And this one street, Woodcrest, would wind up being on the case in like 8 different locations. And as much as I might prefer it that way, and I could get used to casing it that way, no problem, man, what a nightmare it would be for people who were just seeing my case for the first time. And so out of courtesy to them, I have kept it as a deadhead. All right, moving on. 141.132, where carriers use public conveyances for transportation to and from their routes, leaving and returning times must be arranged to reduce carrier transportation waiting time to a minimum. In addition, relay runs should be arranged so that carriers do not have to wait for relays. 141.133, deadheading and deadheading and unnecessary retracing should be eliminated. Yeah, I agree with that in principle. It's just an issue of making the case overly complicated. Lines of travel, as indicated by the case layout, must be followed by the carrier. Unauthorized deviations generate customer complaints, waste both time and energy, and conflict with the order which the letters are placed They waste both time and energy and conflict with the order which the letters are placed in under delivery point sequencing. When it is determined that more efficient travel patterns are possible, management should arrange for the appropriate changes in the sort plan, case labels, and advise the carrier of the new line of travel. You know, I guess it's worth discussing with management because it is the way I would prefer it, and it is my route, and it's the way it's supposed to be in the M39. So, I don't know. I'll at least talk to the boss about it, see about making my route this crazy, ungainly thing. 141.14, segmentations. We don't do these anymore now that we have DPS, but I'll read it anyway. It's short. Management must periodically review carrier mail volume to determine the need for additional or alternative segmentations of mail that could be prepared more efficiently for delivery by distribution personnel or mailers. 141.15, distribution. Delivery managers must coordinate mail flow into the delivery unit, mail preparation, and the establishment or abolishment of segmentations with the appropriate functional area manager. 141.16, when to consider making minor adjustments. Ah, now this will be interesting. Once it is determined that standard operating procedures, SOPs, have been properly implemented and maintained, the delivery manager has considered all other alternatives, carrier work hours have not been reduced, or work hours can be reduced, then management should consider making minor route adjustments. So once again, if you're going to mess with my route, you better have done all of these things first. Unless you're going to make it shorter, in which case, go right ahead. 141.17, advanced preparation. Prior to making any minor adjustment on a unit-wide basis, management must notify the local union as far in advance as possible. Any proposed adjustments must be placed in effect within 45 calendar days after the end of the adjustment consultation with the carriers involved, and changes should not be made between the period November 15th and January 1. Exceptions must be approved by the district manager. 141.18, preliminary planning. Management should carefully review and analyze street management records, PS Form 3997 or electronic equivalent from a nationally approved computer system that provides equivalent information, PS Form 1813, late leaving and returning report, carrier or first carrier delivery trip, PS Form 3996, carrier auxiliary control, PS Form 1571, undelivered mail report, PS Form 3921, volume recording worksheet, PS Form 3921A, daily delivery unit volume worksheet, continuation, and carrier time cards. The manager using PS Form 1840, carrier delivery route, summary of count and inspection, should prepare a summary of minor adjustments worksheet for each route. The summary should contain the post office name, zip code, delivery unit name, route number, carrier's name, ID number, age, length of service on route, route designation, number of trips, type of route, type of vehicle used on route, and other appropriate information as indicated in Exhibit 141.18. And here is Exhibit 14118, and it's this big piece of paper that has all that information on it. 141.19, the formula for making minor adjustments. A simple formula for making minor adjustments without mail counts and inspection may be made in the following manner if the previous count and inspection data is reasonably current and the same carrier is serving the route being considered. A. Determining office time. Using the most recent PS Form 1840, review the net and standard office time and select the lesser of the two. Of course, it's going to be the lesser of the two. If the net office time is used, deduct the actual times used on lines 14, 15, 16, 19, and 21, the 5-minute standard for line 20, and the office break. If the standard office time is used, deduct the standard time allowances for lines 14, 15, 19, 20, and 21. Use actual times if they exceed the standard times. Oh, that's nice. And the actual time used for line 16 and the office break. Divide the remainder by the number of possible deliveries. And here's this chart here that divides up. Oh, it shows the number of minutes for each line item. And if you want to see that chart, feel free to check out page 56. And there's a couple more charts on here that show how many minutes are each line item. And goes all the way out to the truck. It says a comfort stop, 4 minutes. Good to know. Let's actually go through this. All right, let's look at this one that's labeled. This is in Part B, Determining Street Time. And it says here, vehicle loading time, 6 minutes. Actually, I should probably read the preamble here. Determining street time. Using the most recent PS Form 3999, deduct the vehicle loading time, travel time to and from route, time spent collecting from collection boxes, time spent for relays, gassing vehicle, vehicle moves, replenishing mail after loop, brakes, and comfort stop time. Divide the remainder by the number of possible deliveries to determine the street time used for per delivery. All right, so this is finally starting to make a little bit of sense to me. So what they want to figure out is if you have 300 deliveries and it takes you 5 hours, that's 300 minutes, that's 1 minute per delivery. And then they back out all this time, 6 minutes for vehicle loading, 12 minutes for travel to and from the route, 5 minutes for collection boxes. I think these are going to be non-standard. This is just going to be an example. But I don't know. I wouldn't put it past management to just say this is how many minutes there are. 5 minutes for gassing the vehicle, 5 minutes for vehicle moves, 5 minutes to replenish mail after the loop, 10 minutes for a break, 4 minutes for a comfort stop, and total minutes, 52. So that'd be 52 minutes out of that 5 hours is now deducted from your delivery time. And now you're looking at 4 hours and 8 minutes for 300 deliveries. And now each delivery, instead of being a minute, is like 51 seconds or whatever it is. So that's what this is aiding management to determine. So hopefully they would look at actual times that it takes to do this stuff to determine your deliveries. But again, all deliveries are not created equal. You know, a delivery that is out the window takes just a couple of seconds, but a delivery on a parking loop might take a minute. You know, it's hard to say. Anyway, this is the formulas that they use. D, determining possible deliveries. To determine the number of possible deliveries to be removed or added, divide the time being considered for removal or addition by the time per delivery. So, you know, again, if each delivery is 51 seconds and they want to add 10 minutes to your route, then they're going to add 12 deliveries or something like that. Unusual conditions. If unusual conditions exist, the character of the area being transferred must be considered and a fair application of time should be made to office and or street time allowances. Yeah, that definitely needs to be considered, and often it is not. So if I were upset about a transfer of territory, that is something that I might cite, is that they didn't account for unusual conditions. Like maybe there's no parking at a particular apartment building, something like that. G, adjustment procedures. Adjustments should be made as outlined in 243.2. H, decrease or increase in total carrier work hours. The district office must be notified of any decrease in the total carrier work hours due to minor adjustment. Any increase in total carrier work hours should be approved by the district office prior to implementation of the adjustment. In any event, Form 3998 must be submitted to the district office. I, evaluation of adjustments. The adjustments should be evaluated as outlined in 243.6. J, disposition of summary worksheet. Original of summary worksheet must be sent to the office of the manager in charge of delivery services and one copy retained at the delivery unit. 141.2, special office mail counts. This actually came up on ADA arbitration that I listened to this morning with special guest JB, where he was talking about the one-hour office time and how management has tools if they're at their disposal if they're trying to make sure that carriers are being maximally efficient and getting out of the office on time. And this is one of those tools where they can, well, let's read it. When management desires to determine the efficiency of a carrier in the office, a count of mail may be made. The carrier must be given one day's advance notification of this special count. Use PS Form 1838C to record count and time items concerned. The carrier must be advised of the result of the office mail count. All right, so if management is going to do this, they're going to check your efficiency by doing an 1838C. They have to tell you the day before, and they count all your mail. Well, this is something that may be used to adjust your route or for management to lean on you, and so you should verify that count. Anything they count, you count, because you want to make sure that that count is accurate, and you also want to make sure that they don't get off easy doing this stuff just as a form of harassment. So every single flat that you have, every single letter that you have, every single parcel that you have, every single whatever they count, you count. And that includes your DPS. And so if you have 2,000 DPS, yeah, you're going to be sitting there flicking through those trays for however many minutes it takes to count up to 2,000 DPS. That is your right as a letter carrier. And then the carrier must be advised of the result of the office mail count. Now, I had an 1838C done on me maybe 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, and I never did get the result of that count. So I guess I should be upset about that and file a grievance. Maybe I'll do that. All right, next. 142, extension of delivery service. 142.1, requirements for extension. The requirements for extension of city delivery service are outlined in Section 611 of the Postal Operations Manual. These instructions are supplemented by management instructions which can be obtained from the designated district. I don't know what this means, extension of delivery service. Oh, well, good thing there's a definition next. 142.2, definitions. 142.21, extensions. Pertain to new deliveries in areas not included in the boundaries of present delivery service. Oh, like if the city is growing. Or filling in, as in the case of 142.22, ingrowth. That area presently located within present delivery boundaries. The preparation of PS Form 697, extension of delivery service, is not required for additional deliveries added because of ingrowth. These new deliveries are to be recorded on PS Form 1621. 142.3, action after approval. When requests for extensions of city delivery are approved, and with the return of PS Form 697 from the designated authority, the manager must A. determine which route will serve the area. B. determine if adjustment to the route is necessary. Where the extension provides delivery to only a few stops, the time involved can be absorbed by the carrier without any adjustments. Oh, good to know. Good to know. Yeah, feel free to just absorb that time. I'm sure it won't add to your day at all. C. When adjustment is necessary, make it promptly if it can be made without a special inspection, using the formula shown in 141. When adjustments are made without inspection, the adjustments must be fully discussed with the carrier. Doesn't say that they have to get the carrier's approval, just that they have to be discussed. Hey, we're adding to your route. Their discussion over. D. Make special route inspection when adjustments cannot be made as suggested in 141. E. When determined that rural delivery services will be provided, follow the regional instructions for extensions of rural delivery. Keep in mind that extensions of rural service must be effective on the first day of a pay period and that approved PS Forms 4003, official rural route description, must be submitted to the respective postal data center 1 week prior to the effective date. Section 143, reserved. All right, maybe they'll fill that in one of these days. 144, expedited preferential mail delivery program. All right, so I talk about this in the Carrier Academy, which, oh, I got my date now. I'm supposed to start teaching. My first day in the Carrier Academy will be May 7th. I'll probably talk about that more in an upcoming episode. 144.1, description. This is a system designed to give management better control of their delivery operation. It is designed to rearrange the sequence of carrier work functions and establish an earlier and consistent leaving time. Under this system, carriers normally case only preferential and time value mail in the morning. The casing of non-preferential mail and markup work is done in the afternoon when the carrier returns from the route. Parcels will be handled in the established manner. 144.2, approval. This system is optional and should be installed in only those delivery units where tangible benefits will be provided to the customer and or the USPS. District managers have the authority to approve implementation, and such approval must be obtained prior to inception of this program. 144.3, management advantages. 144.31, general advantages to management are: A. Greater opportunity for organizing, directing, coordinating, and controlling the activities during the office phase of delivery operation. B. Better control over auxiliary assistance and overtime. C. Greater flexibility in assigning assistance to routes. D. Opportunity for maintenance staff to make vehicle repairs earlier in the day. E. Availability of vehicles used by carriers for other assignments to improve vehicle utilization. 144.32. Properly arranged and managed, routes under this program can provide more consistent delivery of non-preferential mail each day. Non-preferential mail distributed in the mail processing unit during non-premium daytime hours and moved to the delivery units early in the afternoon may be cased for next day delivery. Where necessary to meet the changing volume fluctuations of non-preferential mail, delivery managers have the afternoon and evening hours in which to assure completion of route casing of this mail for next day delivery. Improvement in actual flow from distribution to delivery and provision of more consistent delivery of this mail can and should provide definite service improvements. 144.33. It is not intended that the expedited preferential mail program promote release of regular carriers before completion of 8-hour service daily. Local management must ensure that each regular route is adjusted as nearly as possible to an 8-hour workday for the carrier. I got to tell you, at first blush, this sounds pretty good. You know, that we just take out, we save the non-preferential mail for the afternoon where there's a lot more flexibility, where maybe a CCA who comes back early can case that up, as long as your own route is still being held to 8 hours, as long as you still get your full 8 hours. Yeah, I don't see a lot of big downside to this, except that the non-preferential mail that ads and catalogs just go out tomorrow instead of today, but who cares? That's, you know, they're, it's part of the deal with non-preferential mail. Sometimes it gets delayed. There must be reasons why this isn't done more uniformly, and maybe we'll get into those. All right, 144.4, customer benefits. Benefits to the customer include the following. A, earlier delivery. Oh, yeah, and for me as a carrier, that's a huge benefit as well, is getting out on the street earlier, because we're coming into the hot part of the year here in Las Vegas where it can be 115 degrees in the dead of the day, and I want to spend as little time out in that as possible. So yeah, getting out earlier is definitely appealing, although frankly, with how low the mail volumes are at my station, I mean, you're talking 10 minutes to case the non-preferential mail in most days. So yeah, maybe it's not worth changing everything up just for that 10 minutes. B, more consistent delivery. C, early return of mail collected by carrier on route. 144.5, operational review. This system is not practical nor necessary to all post offices or delivery units. Carefully review local operating conditions, i.e. mail arrival and availability, present schedules for distribution and delivery, etc., to determine if the system can be used successfully. Generally, the system is designed for residential units and may not be effective at business stations. 144.6, route adjustments. If the routes are properly adjusted before implementation of this system, route adjustments will not normally be required when the system is installed. In a reasonable period after implementation, review workload for possible adjustment. 144.7, implementation. 144.71, establish carrier leaving time, keeping in mind that one of the prime objectives is to provide earlier delivery while maintaining a consistent leaving time. proper scheduling of carriers should negate any basis for early departure times for route deliveries. 144.72. Adjust carrier reporting time only to provide for casing of preferential mail and time value mail, and markups for delivery within the same station. 144.73. Establish schedule for return from route and afternoon office work. 144.74. If possible, the carrier should case only the preferential and time value mail in the morning, since this will aid supervision in visually assessing workload for that delivery trip. 144.75. Require carriers to complete PS Form 1571 in the morning for undelivered preferential and time value, and another in the afternoon for non-preferential mail. Require completion and submission of the form in duplicate by carriers who request copies. It's worth reiterating here that with expedited preferential mail, when you arrive in the morning, your case is already going to have a bunch of mail in it because it's mail that you cased the night before. The non-preferential mail that you cased at the end of the previous day. I guess one potential downside as a carrier is that maybe somebody else cased the non-preferential mail, like your technician cased the mail on the previous day, and maybe they case it different. So that could be a potential issue. But anyway, 144.76, avoid casing local third-class mailings in the morning. Yeah, that's the whole point. 144.77, this system is designed to control overtime and auxiliary assistance. The use of office assistance to case non-preferential mail and or perform markup work can be an effective tool to achieve this objective. Yeah, I agree. That's something that CCAs could do. They could case your bundled flats, again, assuming that you're already getting your full 8 hours. 144.78, require carriers to place flats in delivery sequence in the afternoon. This will permit the relatively low volume of preferential flats to be inserted the following morning and reduce the morning office time needed. 144.8, coordination with mail processing. 144.81, coordinate with mail processing unit to ensure that carrier schedules are consistent with mail availability and that proper flow can be established and maintained. 144.82, assure that accountable mail will be available to carriers for earlier departure. 144.83, request that non-preferential mail be kept in separate distribution. 144.9, transportation. Adjust vehicle runs to stations to A, eliminate unnecessary early morning trips, B, provide necessary midday runs so that non-preferential mail is available for afternoon casing by carriers, C, provide transport to mail processing unit of that mail collected by letter carriers on their routes. And next section is VIM, Vertical Improved Mail. All right, so that's what VIM stands for, Vertical Improved Mail. And here in 145.1, VIM applies to the delivery and collection of mail in high-rise and multi-tenant office buildings. I don't know how many people this is relevant to, but it's fairly short, so I'm going to go ahead and read it. 145.2, three versions. 145.21, VIM is adaptable to both proposed and existing office buildings and exists in three versions. A, call window concept. B, lockbox concept. C, mechanical system concept. 145.22, the three versions in 145.21 are designed to move mail rapidly into a building, make it available to all tenants at the start of the day, and move outgoing mail rapidly into the mail stream. See Publication 196, Planning for Central Mail Delivery. 145.3, Planning Early. The delivery unit managers must immediately inform the district office when it is known that a multi-storied office building is contemplated. This will enable the appropriate district representative to contact and to solicit the cooperation of the building architects, planners, and owners. This must be done as early as possible. In offices without a district representative, the postmaster and the unit manager should meet with owners, architects, or planners to solicit their cooperation after consultation with the district office. 145.4, maintain high degree of efficiency. Delivery unit managers with VIM installations in their delivery area are expected to be thoroughly familiar with all phases of their VIM delivery and must perform street supervision to maintain the service at a high degree of efficiency and to give the tenants the service to which they are entitled. And now we move on to a whole new section, Section 15, City Delivery Service Motorization. 151, surveys. Two types of operational surveys are to be conducted to determine feasibility of motorization as follows. A. The first study will be an operational review of each delivery unit having foot routes to see if it is practical and feasible to install vehicles. All right. I can't imagine that this comes up very often, where they're going to add vehicles. I feel like the places that are going to get motorized, it's pretty much already been done. So if this is happening to you, I refer you to page 62 of the M39, and you can see what some of the considerations are. But there is something relevant in here, which is the selection of vehicles. Like, what kind of vehicle should you be using on your route? And this is applicable to places that have already been motorized. So let's go over this. 152, selection of vehicles. 152.1, selection of vehicle type is governed by many factors, such as A, terrain, B, number of curbline box deliveries, door dismounts, and park and loop stops, C, miles of travel, D, pieces of parcels delivered daily, E, climate, F, traffic, environment, and speed of travel, G, average daily mail, cubic volume, H, average lot frontage. 152.2, in addition, the unit manager may request and assign vehicles using the chart printed below as a guideline. All right, so this chart I find really interesting. Route category 0, description of route, 50 or more curb line stops and door dismounts, 0 to 15 miles of travel, 30 or less average parcels per day. And the type of vehicle that they recommend is right-hand drive, light delivery. So if you have 50 or more curb line stops, which would be either out the window or over the curb, and you drive from 0 to 15 miles, then and you have 30 or less parcels, then they recommend right-hand drive, light delivery, also known as an LLV, or maybe an FFV. Route category 1, 50 or more curb line stops and door dismounts, more than 15 miles of travel, 30 or less parcels daily. Again, they recommend right-hand drive, light delivery. Route category 2, 50 or more curb line stops and door dismounts, unlimited mileage, 31 or more average parcels daily. And remember, that's parcels, not spurs. These are bigger ones that require special handling. For that, they recommend a right-hand drive half-ton truck. And route category number 3, 1 to 49 dismounts, unlimited mileage, 30 or less average parcels. This one is what my route falls into. Right-hand drive, light delivery, or left-hand drive, light delivery. So yeah, I guess if you dismount between 1 and 49 times, the inefficiency of having a left-hand drive vehicle is acceptable. And I would probably agree with that. Like, I could do my route in a van. It wouldn't kill me, because I only have a handful of over-the-curb stops. And number 4, 1 to 49 dismounts, unlimited mileage, 31 or more average parcels daily. And here they recommend either a right-hand drive half-ton truck or a left-hand drive half-ton truck. So if you are getting more than 30 parcels on your route on a daily basis, you are in a position to ask for a bigger truck. If you're not already driving a half-ton truck, it's worth discussing. As I understand it, those trucks have air conditioning. But I could be completely mistaken on what that is. 153, preparation for conversion. I'm not going to worry about that. And then 154, route inspections after you've switched over to motorization. I'm not going to worry about that. All right, next, 16. Oh, this is a good one. Parcels. We are switching to more and more of a parcel delivery service. So here is 161, parcel delivery requirements. The day-to-day supervisory requirements for parcel post routes are basically the same as for city letter carrier routes. The office work routine, both before leaving for the route and after returning from the route, is somewhat different as follows. Oh, this is about parcel post routes. I thought this was going to be just about parcel delivery in general. But whatever, it's not that long. We'll go ahead and read it. A. Determine workload by inspecting incoming volume. Check parcel post in sacks and containers and include outsides. Determine number of delivery hours needed based on reasonable, efficient performance and setup runs. More parcels can be delivered per hour when mail volume is high rather than when it is low. See performance rates during the last count and inspection period. B. withhold generally all small parcels not exceeding 2 pounds to be delivered by foot carriers. Don't delay getting these parcels to the foot carriers. C. Adhere to a distribution cutoff time. Adhere to a distribution cutoff time generally. Do not require that parcels distributed after this time connect with same-day delivery. Dude, so this is already provided for, that if the parcels don't come in by a cutoff time, they don't get delivered today. And here it is, you know, for parcel post routes 161C, that this is a thing that is possible. So in stations like mine, where late distribution of parcels is what's holding us back every day, you know, procedures already exist for this. Those late parcels can be tomorrow's parcels. D. See that parcel post carriers obtain accountable items prior to loading their vehicles and load both at the same time, setting up the parcels in sequence of delivery as they load parcels and or sacks. E. See that loading of parcels on vehicles is efficient. See that carriers do not dump more than one sack separation at the dock and set it up in order of delivery. Carriers must leave promptly after loading and must take enough parcels to minimize returning to the office. F. Unit managers must make periodic checks to determine that the maximum number of firm directs are being made. Make a 3-day check on the number of firms that are that receive 5 or more parcels daily and make direct sacks for those firms. Use PS Form 1838B Parcel Post Firm Delivery Worksheet. 162. Analysis of Parcel Operations. Review assignment records, PS Form 3997 or electronic equivalent, to determine which runs frequently require overtime and or auxiliary assistance. Also, periodically make an analysis of PS Form 1571 to determine when and how frequently parcels are curtailed. 163. Review of sack routing system. Review the sack routing system to determine if improvement or modification is necessary. Usually I route my sack right to your mama. Determine if some separation should be split or consolidated, or if more direct separation should be made. See that clerks sack all sackable mail. When numbered insured parcels are included in a firm direct sack, place an X on the label so that the parcel post carrier will know to obtain a receipt. All right, and the next section is travel and transportation of carriers, city carrier transportation agreement. This is going to be about people who use public transportation or taxis or whatever to get to and from their routes. And this is such an edge case. Well, I don't know. I mean, how many people do this? We must have a lot of carriers in big cities who do this on a regular basis, where they don't drive a vehicle. They use transportation. Let me see how long this section is. Oh, it's a long section. All right, tell you what, guys. We're going to start next time. Get this out of the way with the start of the next episode. And we will move on from there. All right, so that's going to be all for today. Thank you guys for listening. I'm going to have more episodes. Well, I guess the next one I record will be after the rap session tomorrow. And I'll let you guys know how all that went. And then more from the M39. And I have a few other things in line in the short term to kind of liven things up and keep it interesting. So thanks for listening. Oh, one more thing if you've listened all the way to this point. So as I'm recording this, my episode about the Carrier Academy actually released this morning. I had recorded it a couple days ago, and it released this morning. And I've already gotten some really kind feedback from people who enjoyed the episode. They liked, you know, me telling the story about the academy. They shared my frustration. And I really got the most feedback and the most heartfelt feedback on the bit at the end about, like, why I became a union steward and how I feel about the job. And I appreciate it. It means a lot to me. You know, when I first started uploading this podcast and I got like 30 downloads, I was amazed that people were actually strangers were listening to this. And it couldn't all be my mom because she died like 4 years ago. So it's amazing that people are actually downloading this, listening to it, and benefiting from it. And that's what I wanted. And I'm now probably tomorrow or the next day, I'll break 40,000 downloads, which is certainly not Joe Rogan numbers, but for how niche this podcast is, it's pretty solid. So thanks, guys. Thanks for being a part of this journey. Please keep reaching out to me. I absolutely love getting your feedback and your topic suggestions. Oh, and feel free to email me with questions. I'd love to do a question and answer episode of maybe things that aren't worth a whole episode, but do merit being discussed. So all of that stuff can come to classesofmail@gmail.com. You can also find me on social media. It's just my name, Alan Gigax, A-L-A-N-G-E-G-A-X. And all of that stuff is completely public, and I accept all messages, even from spammers. So, thank you guys for listening. I'll catch you next time.